From the West Australian, I'm Ben O'Shea and this is The West Live.
The West Live.
The West Live
with Ben O'Shea.
Piers Morgan is a lot of things, a provocateur, an attention seeker, a prize-winning plonker, but that doesn't mean he's always wrong. Yesterday, he copped a hiding on social media for criticising US gymnastics legend Simone Biles for pulling out of the Olympics for mental health reasons. Some of what he said was ill-informed, and it didn't take into account the physical danger Biles would have been subjected to if she'd competed with anything less than 100% focus. That aside, there has to be a space for a reasonable debate around these things, and that wasn't the case here. Now, this debate is not about demonising athletes like Biles, but to make sure the next Biles isn't forced into the same position. You see, it's entirely up to Biles to decide whether or not she risks personal injury at the Olympics. That's her choice, and no one can say she's wrong. But it's also completely fair to ask how it got to this point, because it seems like the demons she currently faces predate the one disappointing vault she performed on Tuesday, which begs the question of whether Biles should have made the decision to pull out of Tokyo before the Games. It would have been an incredibly difficult decision for someone in her position to make, with so many people from teammates, family and sponsors expecting her to perform. But if, as she said yesterday, she'd already stopped trusting her abilities as a gymnast, then pulling out of the Games was probably her only option, and it would have let another gymnast achieve their Olympic dream. The vitriol against Piers Morgan has been led by users on Twitter, which I gotta say is pretty bloody ironic, considering Biles herself said looking at tweets played a part in her demons resurfacing in Tokyo. So maybe we should really not be talking about Piers Morgan. Maybe we shouldn't even be talking about whether athletes should just suck it up and perform. What we should be talking about is the insidious way social media makes millions of people feel shitty about themselves every single day. And if that can take down the world's greatest gymnast, well, what impact do you think it has on the average kid? Coming up on the show, we'll unpack the Royal Commission into Crown Perth and cross live to Tokyo. But first, let's see what's making news.
The West Live.
Making news.
Joining me now like a bull in a china shop is Sunrise correspondent Matt Tinney.
Good morning, first of all. The door was locked. Is there some message here that I'm not meant to be in here anymore?
I did say to Kate just before we started the show that I ran over to close the door quickly, and as I walked away, I thought, maybe I accidentally locked it. And so that comes as no surprise. So
and my apologies for throwing my wallet around as you were delivering fantastic editorial. You know,
looking at that wallet, can I just describe it for the listeners at home? Oh. So if you've seen Seinfeld, you might remember George Costanza's wallet, which was sort of about as thick as a telephone book almost.
Yeah, and there's no cash in there.
Tinny's just opened it up. There is no cash in there.
No,
what is in there?
Well, there's cards in here. You know, there's bank cards and healthcare card and driver's license. I try not to put it in my pants really that much because my pants would stretch beyond belief. But it's got the work pass in there. But it obviously needs to be replaced. It's been in the washing machine a few times and it's really tattered, but I'm really picky with wallets. It has to be the right colour, has to have the right amount of pockets to put things into. I just haven't found anything.
I was the same. I was exactly the same as you, but you know what?
What have you done now?
I don't even have a wallet anymore. But I just do like Apple Pay Pass.
So I would love that, but Apple Pay. My phone, I need to go and see the IT department actually. The battery dies within about 2 hours.
Oh yeah, that wouldn't be very
useful. I couldn't
pay
for anything.
You save a lot of money though.
Does the IT department listen to this? Because it'll be less awkward if they're prepared when I go down.
I hope they do. Yeah. And now let's talk about this. When I heard there was a shark attack, I was thinking, oh no, what is it going to be? A bull shark, a great white? I was surprised to hear it was a lemon shark.
A lemon shark.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't know we had them in WA. I've seen them on videos in the Bahamas, but this was news to me. We have them in WA. So this fisherman has been flown down to Perth. He's in a stable condition in Royal Perth Hospital. Fisheries says he was from a charter vessel off Varanus Island. Remember that gas explosion years ago?
Yeah. Blast from the past, literally.
There you go, throwback Thursday. So that's about 12 k's off Barrow Island, which people would probably be well aware of because of the industry up there. So This guy had to endure a 10-hour journey after being bitten by said lemon shark to get him to Exmouth for initial treatment, and then the Royal Flying Doctor Service flew him from Exmouth down to Jandakot. He was transferred to Royal Perth.
So, I have questions.
Yes, fire away.
So, he was on a boat.
Yeah.
How'd he get bitten by a shark?
Well, he must have been in the water. You can't get bitten.
Hang on, he's fishing.
Well, if you're fishing and the shark bites you, I mean, I would have thought, like, if it's just a finger that's been bitten or something, they could have dealt with it in Exmouth. It's a bit more serious than that. His injuries were serious.
Even losing a finger is pretty serious. But still so many questions for me because, you know, like either has he reached in to grab a fish that he's caught and the shark has like
Has he been swimming in the water?
Did they catch the shark? Did they pull it onto the boat and it bit him on the leg while it was thrashing around on the deck? That's a possibility.
I mean, the fact that fisheries knew the type of shark, I'm just, you know, there's a few just surmising here. Maybe they had access to the shark.
Yeah, maybe they pulled it onto the boat.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, well...
we'll really obviously try
to speak to him
normally,
at some point.
Normally,
so we'll
when there's a shark bite, it's like, well, you know, you're in the shark's domain. But if the shark was in our domain in a boat, well then...
That's our domain.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an illegal activity on behalf of the shark.
And so, have you got any updates on the missing man that we spoke about yesterday?
Missing man, police have stepped up the search down there around the Wagen area. So the mounted section have joined the rest of the police down there. They've got boats and divers going out there. They still hold hope that this bloke is alive, this father of three, Ajit Khan. His ute was found submerged near Wagen, and he's missing in those floodwaters. So obviously police had hoped that perhaps he got out and has gone somewhere and then can contact them. That hasn't happened. So they're stepping up the search in the area. Hopefully there's some good news there. Father of three.
Yeah, it's really sad. And we know from past experience, the longer these things go on, the less positive the outlook is. But, you know, fingers crossed there's a breakthrough today.
I mean, the good news there is that the water has subsided significantly. Yeah. We saw the water was over the flood marker, totally over the flood marker for a couple of days. And now you can see the road. So... it should make it a bit easier in terms of searching for
him. Fingers crossed, we'll hold hope out for him. And now, meanwhile, up in Perth, Karrinup Shopping Centre, which is my local, I've been watching it under construction for, it seems like, the past
600
years.
Yeah,
I know.
So
they built the Great Wall of China quicker than this thing.
So phase one is now complete. It's been officially opened. They cut ribbons only a short time ago. They had a big crowd there, actually. You would have thought like the Beatles were appearing or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people, it's been long awaited, hasn't it?
Exactly.
So 60 new stores in there. There's a food hub with an Aldi in there. There's a Nike store. There's Adidas store in there, among others. Pop-ups, activations, all these sorts of things.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I know. So have you been... Oh, you would have been inside as it was happening.
I was there on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I was walking around trying to figure out where the new section was. It wasn't open at that point. And so, like, I'm excited to go up and have a look. I love it. I do love a shopping centre.
It's quite flash.
I love a food court. And there hasn't been a food court in Karrinup for probably 2 years.
And it's going to be quite flash
That's still not open.
That's still, I think, and I think...
Have you been to Carousel?
I remember seeing a picture... it's been a while since I've been to Carousel.
I'll tell you what, their food precinct up there is amazing.
Really?
They've got like an Ippodo ramen place, a lot of nice cafes, a TGI Fridays, which is like a big American institution.
How are your shares going in Carousel?
Yeah. Going up after this.
I'm one of those weird people that tends to go into the city. Because
I love the vibe of the city.
I know some people like to talk it down, although it's all turned around since the new Lord Mayor, hasn't it?
It's amazing that guy, whoever he is.
But I really enjoy going in there, even though sometimes I feel like I'm paying $100 for parking and I come away with nothing. I like soaking up the vibe of it because sometimes I find shopping centres just, I don't know, soulless. But but I must say, I have been to Karrinup a few times because I've ducked into H&M there and got the kids a Boost juice thing just to keep them quiet while I try and pick up something. But it looks really swish.
Yeah, Karrinup has always been one of the more upmarket shopping centres.
It's like a concierge area in the car park.
Yep.
I don't know what for, but it's there. No, and there's beautiful seats there. And and no, there's like travelators. And
it's going to be great.
It's basically like some sort of ancient Greek-inspired palace, in a way, with all the stone there. Yeah.
Exactly. A temple to consumerism. And, and so, you know Uniqlo, right? The brand.
Yes, yeah.
Have you seen all the stories? Have you seen all the stories recently that the global creative director is actually a guy from Perth?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, and he was a part of the Brand Perth Forum with Baz at the City of Perth. And so he's been around. And when I was there on Sunday, I went to Uniqlo and I saw him in there.
Oh, my goodness. How did you recognize him from the story?
He's very distinctive. He's got very distinctive glasses.
Do you think he was checking over the store?
I don't know. I don't think the staff realized.
Did you go up to him? I feel like this is your starstruck moment.
Well, I thought I knew him. Because he looked familiar to me. I recognized him. I'm like, hey, I know that guy.
And then
I was like,
that when you do like 47 double takes to try to work out who it is. And then do you ever do this? I'm really good with recognizing faces, but converting them to the actual name is a struggle. 100%. And then I do this. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I hope that it comes to me at some point.
I just go, mate. And then that's fine.
I know, and then you reach this period, isn't it, when it's too awkward? I've done that with people in work here. I really apologize.
Then I transition to buddy.
How long do you need to have known them to get to bro?
Oh, bro. Oh,
Is that why you called me bro for six years? I think we're there now, bro.
Yeah, bro. And Maddie, thank you so much for bringing all of this into the West Live today. We'll have a chat to you tomorrow.
Will do. Have a good one, mate.
You're listening to the West Live.
Another day, another bucket load of rain. 25 out of 28 days in July, it's been wet. Let's chat to the good folks at the Bureau of Meteorology, duty forecaster Bob Tarr. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning.
So are we still on track to smash the record for July?
Yes and no. In terms of rain days, we're going to reach 28 for the month, since we do have rain predicted the next 2 days, and it's very likely that we will see at least a little bit of rain at the metro gauge. So that would reach 28 rain days for the month. That would be the second most on record, with records dating back into the, to about 1880. The record is 29, which was set in 1946. So in terms of rainfall days, it's right up there. In terms of rainfall totals, we're currently sitting on 257 at the Perth Metro site. The record for the entire month at the new site, which is in Mount Lawley, is 278. So we need another 21 mils. It'll be pretty close to there in the next couple of days. So a bit touch and go as far as whether we'll pass that one. If we do pass that, then that would be the wettest July since 1958, which was 425 mils, and we're certainly not going to catch that one. But it's quite unusual weather we've had this month.
Well, it sounds like the biggest nail biter involving water since Ariana Titmus in the swimming pool in Tokyo. So, how much rain are we expecting today and tomorrow, and then the next day?
Yeah, so today we're looking for about 5 to 10 mils at the metro site. We'll have more up in the hills, and then tomorrow it'll be 8 to 15 mils for metro. The next day is Saturday, so it still seems like it's the month, but the way that we record rainfall is to 9 a.m., so any rainfall that we get after 9 a.m. on Saturday will go into the August tally. So we have to reach 21 mils before 9 a.m. on Saturday, otherwise it'll tick over to August.
So it sounds like it really is going to be touch and go. It could come down to a couple of mils.
Yeah, it could. And it also just depends on where the rain bands go. So so we've had almost 22 mils at Jandakot since 9 a.m. yesterday, whereas Perth Metro has only recorded about 6 mils. So it's actually the Perth Metro site, a lot of the rain in the overnight period just seemed to have missed that location. Most areas throughout the rest of the metro have seen heavier rainfall, so I guess a bit unlucky. And Jandakot itself is up around 300 mils for the month, so some of the heaviest rainfall has actually missed the metro site. And then up in the hills, where we always see heavier rainfall, we're up around 420 mils at Bickley for the month, which is, again, a very, very high figure.
Well, it seems like we haven't seen any sunshine at all in July. What's the outlook for August? It's still a month of winter to go.
Yeah, so it does look like we'll have showers on the weekend, so we'll start out a little bit wet for August, but then a pretty strong ridge of high pressure is going to develop through central parts of the state. So it does look like a lot of next week will be dry across the area. So certainly a stronger high pressure system than any of the ones that we've seen in July, which have really been very transient, and we've just had this succession of fronts. So yeah, it does look like we'll have some nice weather next week, which is, I think everybody would be happy for a few days of sunshine and dry weather.
Yeah, count me among those people. Well, I hope we do get the weather record. I'm sure it's pretty exciting for you guys there at the Bureau of Meteorology. Judy forecaster Bob Tarr, thanks for your time on the West Live today.
Okay, cheers.
The Royal Commission that will decide the future of Crown Perth is well underway. Covering the inquiry is the West Australian's legal affairs editor, Tim Clark. Good morning, Clarky.
Morning, Ben.
Now, can you tell us where the inquiry is headed so far?
Yes, so we've entered the second phase of the Perth inquiry, and this is basically the juicy bits. Basically, what we're going to hear in the next weeks and months to come is all the stuff that Crown's been up to over the last however long, 15, 20 years. And some of that is not going to be very flattering to Crown, because in other inquiries in the eastern states, we've heard about money laundering. We've heard about junkets that were run by guys that had links to criminal organizations and triad gangs and things like that. So there's going to be some dirt. There's going to be some dirty laundry that's washed in public in the next few months. And then, as you said in the intro, that's going to lead to ultimately the three commissioners here having to rule on whether Crown is fit to run a casino in Perth. And the way it's trending over east is the commissioner over there, Ray Finkelstein, he's very critical and has been so far of the way Crown have run things there, and we all know about Sydney and their license was refused. So it'll put a bit of that, those other inquiries will put a bit of pressure on the commissioners here, because there is a general trend across the legal fraternity across Australia to say that Crown really hasn't been up to snuff the way it's been running that business over the last 20 years.
Mm. And we've seen questions raised about pokies, which we know are illegal in WA. What have you learned there?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So in the opening statement that Council Assisting Patricia Cahill made last week, she was very strong on this. Now, we all know pokies are banned as they have them in the eastern states, are banned in Western Australia and have been for a long time. But you are allowed in Crown and only in Crown to play what they call electronic gaming machines, which were originally brought in to basically be an alternative to playing cards on a table. If you wanted to play baccarat on a screen, you could. If you wanted to play poker on a screen, you could. But the traditional features of a pokie, i.e., you know, your cherries and your auto play and all that, were banned. But what's been hinted at is that Crown were very keen to maximise the monetary profit they were making off these electronic gaming machines, which was 50% of their trading revenue. And we heard yesterday that there was a very strong push from Crown to the gaming regulator to ease the restrictions on the gaming machines here, to speed up play, for instance, also to increase the take of those machines, i.e. the punter could lose more. And that was as late as 2019. And the way the opening was phrased, the way of some of the questions yesterday, I think that this commission is going to edge towards a finding, or certainly a view, that Crown were trying to get pokies in by stealth. And I don't think that will go down well with anyone, particularly not the government, who we know Mark McGowan's very strong on pokies. And I think the public as well, the public sentiment here has also always been, we don't need pokies, we don't want pokies. And so if Crown were trying to get them in by stealth, then that's not going to look very good on their CV.
Mm. And so what are the possible ramifications of this Royal Commission? Could we see changes to ownership, changes to the structure of the business?
Absolutely. I think that's almost a given, certainly in Melbourne and obviously in Sydney. And by flow on, I think that will happen here. The growing feeling amongst all the watchers of these various inquiries is that the various chairmen of commissions and things are looking to see Crown radically changed the way it was run, and that was for many years, i.e. a head office in Melbourne, and then Perth was basically a sister company, and there was even a clause in the Melbourne Casino Act to say that Melbourne had to remain the flagship, and so there'll be questions about how that affected the Perth business. So I think what's in the wind is that Crown will have to break up. They won't be able to run this shared service agreement model whereby, you know, bosses here were bosses in Melbourne and everyone did everything. I think they're going to be very localized businesses. Perth will be Perth. It will be run from Perth. It will be have a WA head office, and same in Melbourne. What that means for Crown, whether Crown will even want to enter into that model, well, that is a multi-billion dollar question, because if they don't, then that means they're going to have to sell the business. And as we've seen over the last weeks and months, they've tried to sell the business, or they've been trying to sell the business, and people are backing away at a million miles an hour because of all the issues they've got. So, yeah, it's absolutely seismic for Crown as it runs now, and it will be very seismic for the way the casino in Burswood, whether it's Crown Perth or someone else, the future of that glittery complex on the river.
Mm. Still a long way to go in this one, and it'll be another very interesting day at the inquiry today. The West Australian's legal affairs editor, Tim Clark, we know you need to get into the commission, so we'll have to let you go. Thanks for your time today on The West Live.
Pleasure, mate.
You're listening to The West Live.
In the past year, right here in Perth, 56 people experiencing homelessness have lost their lives. That's more than one death a week. It's a shameful number of deaths at a time when our state is experiencing an economic boom. The most recent death, a mum of six, Alana Garlett. Joining me now is her sister, Michelle. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, how are you, Ben?
Firstly, can I just say sympathies to you and your family. Was this your greatest fear for your sister?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, she was only 38. Do you have any answers?
Yeah. No, look, the coroners won't even give us the answer. All they're saying is a cardiac arrest. But if the police can pull the CCTV cameras in, we'd be able to see who was with her last and question them.
Mm. Can you tell us, what do you know at this point? What happened?
Well, we got told, I was in Narrogin, but we got told that we were next of kin, me and my niece. And when they said, we've got some news, police coming in, we said, we've got some news about your sister. Have you got a sister named Alana Garrett? I said, yeah. That's when they told us that she had passed. She was unconscious behind the Wellington Street Church. That's how they found her. Someone rang an ambulance for her.
And you're still none the wiser as to what happened?
Yeah, no, that's it. We're like, if we're kept in the dark, at the end of the tunnel, there should be a light.
Mm. And how has this news and this uncertainty impacted your family?
It really shocked us, eh? Because we were close. We were a very close family.
And she'd been sleeping rough. How long had she been homeless for?
I'd say about 8 to 9 years.
Wow.
She's been homeless for. This is where we want the government to fund. The Department of Housing. And the Department of Housing, pull your fingers out. Because at the end of the day, they've got families. And you might be one of their family's members, you know? Mm. And this happens. You wouldn't be able to forgive yourself. So, yeah, it's so bad, you know? Mm.
And talking about public housing, what was your sister's history with public housing? Was she on the waiting list for a property?
There's empty properties out there. Well, DC, you know, Department of Housing help. You know, like I said, it's just paperwork.
And what about your mum, Michelle? How's she coping?
Oh, she's really heartbroken. But she just says that she wants to pursue what happened to my sister. Also, she said about these homeless people. Help them. Get them off the streets. You know, these people who've got big jobs, especially Aboriginals, they'll sit there, walk past, look at the person, even if they know the person. They look at the person in disgrace, like they've disgusted in them. Well, that's them, you know, they got kicked out of houses. Come on. You know, that's what made them homeless. And they had children, you know? So sad. Mm. How the government is treating these people. There's no heart.
So often in these situations, we hear that people who are forced into homelessness are battling mental health problems. They might have issues around drug and alcohol. Do you think intervention is the key here? Should people have tried
intervene? They should intervene. Know that they should let them know that they're there for them. Don't turn your back on them, you know? Don't walk past and don't say hello or anything like that. Me, when I get in there, I'm happy and, you know, go and see my sister. I say hello to everybody. It's like, yeah. So I was supposed to be a shy person, but yeah. Because my sister knew him on the streets, you know? Mm. That's the reason why.
And do you feel it's the general public and people in positions of power who are really turning their backs on people who are struggling?
Yes, yes, yes. That is true. Because we see it every day. Why are they in these places if they're turning their backs on these families and people, you know, on the streets, the homeless and families that want to be housed? You know, so ridiculous.
What's the happiest memory you have of your sister?
Oh, dancing in the street. And that whistle, man, that was piercing. Yeah, that whistle, yeah. That song Ed Sheeran. talking out loud or speaking out loud or something. Yeah. Thinking out loud. That's, yeah, one of the songs that she used to dance to too. I miss those times, eh? Yeah, I love my sister.
We talk about funding, Michelle. Like, what do you think when you hear Premier Mark McGowan talking about WA having a $5 billion surplus?
You know, I think, see how they're getting fat cats? Tycoons, whatever they call them, tycoons. They should be, when they go on their trips and everything, at least your house is out. Don't be frightened. At least you'll have a house to come home to. But these people are homeless. There's so many other family members out there that are homeless of ours. And it's really hurting us.
Hmm. And in a winter like this that has been one of the roughest on record for decades, do you worry that your sister won't be the last?
That's true. Yeah, that's right. That's why I'm telling all these people. If you've got a family that's homeless, don't get them out of town. Help them get housing. Don't sit back and wait for something to happen to them. Because we're finding it hard to grieve. We're grieving so hard, you know, because she's our baby sister. And we shouldn't have her as a memory. You know, we should have her as a, being alive and in house with the children around her. And her grandchildren, you know? Because her grandchildren are going to, you know, grow up not knowing who she was. We can only, you know, show photos, like a picture in a frame. That's all we can show them. And that is really sad for us and my mother, you know, the siblings and the parents.
And Michelle, like, I think your message to the fat cats is very clear. Spend some of that, spend some of that $5 billion on housing for people who need it. But I want to know,
that's true,
what's your message to people like me who have a roof over our head, we have a warm bed at night, we're removed, very far removed from the issues that people sleeping rough have to deal with on a daily basis. What's your message to people like that?
Instead of walking past them, stop and say hello. Get to know them. You know, they sit there nearly every day, near train stations, near the McDonald's. Don't walk and turn your head the other way. Because at the end of the day, you could be sitting there and it could be the other way around.
Michelle, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Ben.
I really appreciate it. And again, our sympathies to you and your family in this difficult time.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you very much.
And Michelle and her family will hold a vigil at Parliament today to demand answers from the government. Okay, let's head to Tokyo, where there's a great story at the BMX. 7 News' Ashley Mullaney is over there. Good morning, Ashley.
Morning, Ben.
Now, all eyes will be on Saya Sakakibara today, won't they?
Yeah, this is such an incredible story, one that my colleague Matt Carmichael has followed really closely. It's really equal parts inspiring. inspiring and heartbreaking. This is a brother-sister duo, Saya and Kai Sakakibara, who were both supposed to be competing here in Tokyo in the BMX. But sadly, Kai had this terrible crash months out from the Olympics. Well, they were scheduled, obviously, for 2020. He had this terrible crash and suffered a brain injury as a result of that. And that has, of course, dashed his hopes of competing in the Olympics. And he has been on a long, long journey of recovery. Just to be able to get out of hospital, he's had to learn to walk, to read, to talk again. But his sister, Saya, she's just incredible. 21 years old. She's competing today for a place in the semifinals. And she's really taken this on as an opportunity not just to compete for herself, but to, of course, make Kai really proud too. And it's just such a remarkable story. Kai has actually flown over to Tokyo. He'll be carrying the torch in the Paralympics after the Games. And he's here. I'm actually with him at his grandmother's house in Tokyo, where he's going to be watching it. Of course, there's no spectators at any of the Games, but he's going to be watching every minute of it and cheering her on today.
It'd be pretty special to be at the BMX track, but I reckon where you are is even more special. Can you describe what the mood is like in that household?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, they're just so excited. It also happens to be Kai's 25th birthday today. So they've just woken up so thrilled today and really, really excited to see Saya compete. I mean, we've got the Aussie flag here. We've got a cake on the way for Kai, which he doesn't know about yet. But yeah, so it's a really nice feeling here. And we're just obviously everyone's behind Saya and hoping that she does well today. And you know, he's been chiming in with his 5 cents worth of advice and sending her video, and she's been sending him videos over the past few days on the training course to try and get his feedback and input, and he's just said she needs to go out there and have fun, and that's the main thing. So yeah, it's just such a lovely story, and I have to say that's been one of the most wonderful part of these Olympics. There has just been so many inspirational stories to tell, and this is one of them.
And what event is Saya exactly racing in today?
Yeah, she's in the BMX, of course, the women's quarterfinals today. So she needs to get through in the top four for a place in tomorrow's semis. And then the finals will also be held tomorrow afternoon. So this time tomorrow or tomorrow afternoon, we could find out whether Saya actually takes home a medal. She's seventh in the world, so she's a really good chance of a medal in this competition.
And she's such an incredible competitor. There's a great quote from her that the girls are just as competitive, so I don't feel like a female in sport. I feel like an athlete.
Wow, yeah, I mean, that sums her up perfectly. And these two are just joined at the hip. They really have been inseparable. And it's funny because Kai used to be the one that would be really driving the training and be so obsessive about the sport, and she would kind of come along for the ride. Well, she's now taken the reins and she's been the one to be just so dedicated and organized with the training and preparation for these Games. So, yeah, we're all getting behind them and really wishing Saya all the best this morning.
And Ash, tell us a little bit about your experience over there in Tokyo. We spoke to you earlier in the week. How's it all looking over there now?
Yeah, look, it's obviously a really different Games. There's kind of nothing you can compare this to, right? Because we've never had a delayed Olympic Games before, an Olympics during a pandemic. And as I've said before, there's definitely been mixed feelings and reactions from people in Japan about these Games going ahead. And worryingly, the numbers are definitely on the rise here. Tokyo and Japan have just recorded their highest daily rate of COVID since the pandemic started, which is a real worry. And of course, the issue is this Delta variant that's out of control and low vaccination rates here. But the Olympics are doing a tremendous job of trying to keep everyone, the athletes, the press, everyone in a bubble of sorts and away from the general population, just to try and keep people as safe as possible. But Yeah, look, as I said, there's been some really remarkable stories, and I think that there's been so many Olympic moments, not just for Australia, but other countries too, that have probably lifted the spirits of so many people that are in lockdown or who have gone through such a tough time. But yeah, Japan is dealing with this like the rest of the world. They're in a state of emergency right now, but the idea of a state of emergency is quite different to what you might think. I mean, the streets are still packed. There's still, you know, shops and restaurants and things open, but they do have to close early in the evening around 8 o'clock. So just trying to stop people from going out, partying, celebrating the things you'd normally do during an Olympic Games, I guess.
And tell me a little bit about the media bubble. Like, when you're in that bubble with the Australian journalists and you have a day like we did yesterday, a record medal haul for our nation, you just feel pumped?
Yeah, sorry, I caught the tail end of that. Yeah, it is a different experience for the media here. For the first 2 weeks that you're in Tokyo, you are in sort of a quarantine where you can only move between the hotel and Olympic venues or the IBC, the broadcast centre. So you're quite restricted in your movements, but still able to go and, you know, cover the relevant events. And then after that, there's a bit more freedom to move around. But yeah, definitely for that first 2 weeks, the media is quite restricted in where they can go. There's thousands of press here from all over the world, so they've had to be really careful with how they manage that.
Mm. 7 News, Ashley Mullaney. The race is just moments away, so we're going to let you go. We'll all be glued to the screen over here in Australia. Go, Sire. And Ash, we look forward to your reports on 7 News. The entire team is doing such an incredible job over there.
Thanks so much, Ben. Lovely to chat to you.
Okay, just a quick update on the situation in Sydney. New South Wales recorded 239 new locally acquired cases of COVID-19 in the 24 hours to 8 p.m. last night. 81 cases were in isolation throughout their infectious period. 22 cases were in isolation for part of their infectious period. 66 cases were infectious in the community, and the isolation status of 70 cases remains under investigation. Most likely many of them were out in the community. There are currently 182 people in hospital with COVID-19 in New South Wales. 54 of them are in intensive care, and 22 of those currently require ventilation.
Mark Duffy.
By golly gosh.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wowee!
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who?
They are Duff and Quarters, and they join me in the studio now. G'day, gents.
How are you?
Ben.
Pretty sobering, isn't it, to hear that that New South Wales case tally's now jumped up above 200?
How many of them were at the demonstrations on the
weekend? Yeah, I know, you have to wonder. And it's like, it will see whether or not those numbers increase over the next couple of days with the incubation period of the virus. Certainly no sign of ending. Bad news for rugby league. Is it bad news for the AFL?
Well, they'll keep trying. They'll keep pushing forward. They'll play games in Queensland. They'll play games wherever they can. They will play games until they run out of real estate.
Yeah, that's right. Like, their attitude is to plough on that. This will not necessarily get better, and it may in fact get worse, and it may spread to other places. So basically, while you can, play. And yeah. If that means playing in empty stadiums, if that means the fixture gets a little bit unfair in terms of breaks between games or in terms of venues, you know, we've already seen one of our teams lose a home game so far this year. That may happen again. Other teams, of course, Sydney and the Giants won't have home games in any real sense between now and the end of the season.
And do you reckon that will hurt the Swans? Because they've rounded into some pretty good form now and they're winning away
so far
from home.
They've been away. I mean,
does that catch up to you though?
Well, it hasn't.
I reckon it can.
Well, it can, but this group at the moment is very resilient, and at the moment they're showing no signs of it. So
there's a fair sprinkling of youth in the Sydney team, and the young teams tend to handle this better than older teams. Older teams tend to have wives and children at home. There's more dislocation for them. Young teams, you know, young single men, they treat it as an adventure.
Yeah.
You know, it's a trip away with the boys.
Yeah.
And lots of bonding and camaraderie.
And we saw that last week. Buddy Franklin looked a bit grumpy. I mean, he's got the wife and kids at home. He looked grumpy. He's running around belting everyone and getting off.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to do? You want to talk Olympics or you want to talk footy?
We'll talk both.
Yeah, which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with the MCG and Grand Final and the Ring of Steel around the MCG being floated at the moment. So Victoria's in a sort of semi open state at the moment, not in complete, they can't roam around, but if things improve, they're talking about a ring of steel around the MCG, they're talking about those antigen tests being done, which you can get a result within 10 minutes. They're trying to sort of manufacture a way in which they can have a capacity MCG.
What about literally putting it in a bubble?
Well, it's actually...
put it under a dome.
Well, it actually is like that, because they're talking about a ring, you know, the Swan Street Bridge in Richmond, extending out to the northern suburbs. They're talking about this ring. So, sorry, it's just out the northern, not the northern suburbs, but around the MCG precinct. So you have to have these tests when you go in. You have to have proof.
But what is the good of that?
Well,
yeah, that's rubbish, and that's all for optics. You know what? If they want to do it, you're going to have a vaccine passport.
Yeah.
So basically, unless you're fully vaccinated, you aren't going to the MCG on Grand Final day.
We will have a vaccine passport. I think there's no surer thing.
We need some way to incentivise those recalcitrants who aren't getting the jab to. And if it's you can't go to the footy unless you roll up your sleeve, you know, so be it. If you can't travel overseas, if you can't enjoy some of those freedoms. You know, as soon as it's got to start to add up, right?
And I actually think we may get to a stage next year where you cannot get a club membership unless you can show you're fully vaccinated.
Yeah, right.
So there's some interesting stuff hanging around Melbourne as well. They're due to play here next week against the Eagles on the Saturday at Optus Stadium. So they play Gold Coast at Metricon on, and I say that warily because games are moving all the time at the moment. So they're due to fly out at midnight on Saturday, but I believe Joondalup Resort will not be available next week for them, which means so they've got to do that week-long quarantine leading into the game. So what do?
They
have to go into the city, but it's not ideal.
The McEwer.
Hang on, they're a visiting AFL team. We don't want to give them any luxury. Come on. I reckon the Great Eastern Motor Lodge.
There's some good rooms above the Civic.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I believe that Optus is prepared to open an area for them so that they can have like a sterile recreation area, because if they're locked in a CBD, that's just no good in the lead up. So wait and see what happens there. That could play out. It could be a very interesting story in the next couple of days.
And before we get to that, what's happening this weekend?
Well, okay, so West Coast versus Collingwood at the MCG. We used to call the MCG the donut because it looked like a donut from there. It's now the Ring of Steel. MCG. And Fremantle versus Richmond here, which is the absolute last dice Chicago for Fremantle in terms of any hopes they have of playing finals.
Yeah, and with a few significant outs now, Fife's out for the season, which is probably a bit merciful, really. I mean, shoulder's been popping in and out a bit. And I was of the belief that you play until you can't make finals, and they can make finals still, but it's looking pretty remote. And that shoulder really, it just needs a reset with that. Now he's had the surgery and he can come back next year fresh, hopefully.
Yeah, the problem with it was that it kept on popping out, didn't it? I mean, he couldn't tackle, he couldn't put it in the air to take a mark. So you basically had this guy out there who could win some ground level ball but was playing with one arm.
Yeah, he's going to play
regardless. So you're almost protecting himself from himself by go and have the surgery, get the priest, you know, get an early start on the preseason on your rehab and come back fresh next year, hopefully, the Fife we know and love.
What about Walters?
Yeah, I don't think Walters will play again this year. I think Peter Bell earlier in the week said unless they play finals, it's very doubtful. We don't think they're going to play finals because their run home is so hard and they've now got these absences. Of course, Alex Pearce won't play this week either because he's in the concussion protocol. The third of the Lance Franklin trilogy from last weekend.
Any chance of an upset against the Tigers, who haven't been travelling
well? There
that
is,
well.
But I still see Richmond as filling that eighth position on the ladder that no one wants at the moment because everyone keeps losing. But I think West Coast two games clear in seventh. Now, I expect West Coast to play finals. I think Richmond will fill that eighth position. I would be surprised if they lose this game.
How far have they fallen, though? It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about them. You know, they may be a bit wobbly, but they'll come good.
Number of elements. It's a tipping point, isn't it? Injuries have crueled them significantly, and it's also three flags.
Yeah.
You know,
catches up to you.
You've been to the buffet. You're sort of not that hungry, are you, later?
Well, Damien Hardwick talks about, you know, big boy pants. I think they're wearing their little boy nappies at the moment.
You know, I always find room for dessert, though, after I've been to the buffet three times. Always save a little space.
Depends which one it is, mate. If it's the Bayswater buffet, you don't want dessert.
Now, have you been to the Carolee Tavern? They had a good buffet.
Oh, I love the Carolee Tavern. The grilled fish and salad at the Carolee Tavern. That was a bachelor's get out,
We digress. What about West Coast? So Collingwood, what are you tipping?
Should win.
Yeah. Should win.
Yeah. Have to win.
Well, is it not mathematically have to, but you know, if they want anybody to take them seriously,
it's about momentum now and creating some sort of momentum heading into September.
How many games?
Four.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, they should win this game,
and they showed good signs last weekend. So I expect them to keep improving. Whether they can improve enough to threaten the top teams is another thing.
Yeah, right. Do you think they had that moment, you know, where they had that sort of real hard look in the mirror and they've turned a corner, or is it too early to say that?
They might have had that moment where they had that hard look in the mirror and thought their hair was a bit out of
place. Yeah, I think it's also to do with players getting a run back at it. Elliot Yeo's case in point. He's needed a bit of a run. He missed so much footy. He's just showing, he's still probably, we won't see the 100% Elliot Yeo this year, but he's getting close to it.
Mm-hmm. And what else is happening around the round?
There's a bit of sorting out going on, isn't there? And I think what we're seeing is that what happens at this time of year is that the best teams, the absolute best teams, start to emerge. And we're seeing that with Geelong, I think, and probably to a lesser degree, the Western Bulldogs.
See, I disagree with that. I think to a greater degree, but anyway.
And the best players emerge. And Marcus Bontempelli now has taken himself to a level I don't think anyone else in the AFL is at the moment.
And if it would be a compelling grand final if they were to meet, because you've got this, Dogs won it a couple of years in 2016, but this emerging young-ish group against Geelong, the Steely Cats have been around forever, with these veterans, including Patrick Dangerfield, who's never played in a premiership. So I think it'd be a great grand final, two very contrasting styles. Interesting news this morning, post that Hawthorne nasty boxing incident, AFL has banned sparring. So there was an investigation, there was an incident at Hawthorne. Mitch Lewis got in the ring with Kaczynski. He was concussed. He missed 3 weeks, I think. So WorkSafe had a look at it. They have cleared Hawthorne, but the AFL has come down now and said you can box into pads, but there's no more sparring from this point onwards with other players, with other trainers, or with any coaches. So really interesting move by the AFL. I've got to say, I think that's a bit of overkill. And I'm not sure where this is going to lead.
Mm. Well, should we talk some Olympics now?
Yep.
Yes.
There's that other thing that's happening.
Catch your breath. Might have seen some of it. What a morning we're going to have this morning.
Oh, wow. What a great start for the Australian team, though. Like, when we have some success in the pool, it just sets us up really nicely. And you can't say that about the last few Olympics. It's been, if anything, there have been some really quite disappointing results in the swimming pool. We've gone in with high expectations, haven't delivered. Seems the opposite is the case in Tokyo.
So the girls got us going, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
The 4x100 meter relay team, you know, absolutely outstanding in a league of their own. And then, of course, Ariane Titmus knocking off Katie Ledecky in the 400, which is kind of like their meeting point. So I think Titmus was probably always going to beat her in the 200, and Ledecky won the 1500 and will probably win the 800.
Yep.
So the real showdown was the 400, and when Titmus getting to the line there.
Incredible.
And then McEwen's great swim, you know, for a kid in the first Olympics, blew the start a bit and then came back over the top of them, which was just an amazing exercise in composure.
Emma McKeon as well. So
she looks pretty good yesterday.
Olympic record in the 100 free, so she'll give that a shake.
I reckon she did it easy. Like, she looked like she had plenty in the tank.
Oh, yeah.
The big thing, Quarters, is that who gets left out of the 4x200
meter? Well, I can tell you who gets left out. Well, Tamsin and Brianna are out, and there's no Campbell sisters because they've released their team. So you've got Ariane leading off, I believe. You've got
McKeon will be in
McKeon. So, and then you've got the two other girls. So the girl who was in the 4x100 free, his name escapes me at the moment. But no Campbell sisters, no Brianna and Tamsin Cook. So they swam in the heats. Now, no surprise Tamsin Cook's not there. Bree maybe, because she was in that 4x2 world record winning team. But she does have her own final about half an hour before that. So I guess that's probably got a lot to do with it.
Factor.
The girls give that a hell of a shake. And
They'll win.
And I've got to say,
they're going to have to fall off the blocks at the start.
You wouldn't bet against them.
Or break during one of the changes. They left their two best swimmers out of the heat swim and were a couple of seconds off the world record and half the length of the pool in front of their nearest rival. They are going to win.
And I've got to say, Brianna and Tamsin will still get gold medals in a private ceremony. You get the medals if you're part of the team.
So if you swim in the heats and you don't...
Yep.
Yes.
Ah,
you
right.
get a medal at a private ceremony. Now, for Tamsin, just remember, retired from elite swimming. 10 months she's been in the pool. 10 months. Yeah. So only 24. She'll swim in Paris, and she's going to have an Olympic gold medal as a relay swimmer. What a magnificent effort
amazing,
for Tamsin.
Did work experience here.
Yeah, she Tamsin did. She's a great girl.
And yeah. So what about Simone Biles? That's one of the big talking points of this Olympics. She's not there.
I think what you see with the emotion release of some of these athletes after they've competed, succeed or fail, like we saw Titmus on the pool deck after her second swim, bursting into tears in a coach's arms. The build-up, it's a four-year plan, and for some of them, it's an eight-year plan. Mm. And to wear that, you know, that pressure for that long, and Biles has been at the absolute top of her field for, what is it, about 8 years now? And I'd say it's just gotten too much. She might have come in a little bit off her best, felt the pressure. It's a lot. It's a lot for them to bear. And I say well done to her. Put a hand up and say, you know what, I can't do this.
She's still technically, is she out of the individual yet?
Yeah, she withdrew.
This morning.
Yep.
Because I know she's out of the team.
She withdrew yesterday from the
individual. She's out of the individuals yet, though. No, she could still compete in that. I think it's unlikely.
She said yesterday in her presser that it was reading some tweets that pushed her over the edge.
Mm. If I was an athlete, I wouldn't be on.
And if you want to talk, I mean, we're talking sad. Sky Nicholson and Caitlin Parker in the boxing yesterday. Now, Sky Nicholson's brother was killed in a car accident. Fought at the Commonwealth Games. Would have fought at the Olympics, but he died before she was born. She spent her life building to this moment, and she's out in the first round. So just these stories, we talk about the gold medal and the triumphs, but there's so many of these stories littered around the Olympic Village.
Yep, so many stories. Are you guys going to tell some stories in your podcast today?
As always.
With Mark Reddings?
With Skeet.
You have to borrow him from me because I've got him on the Let's Go Tokyo podcast.
And don't forget our sound effects man, Josh Garlop, who just loves a good sound effect.
Fantastic. Well, Duff and Quarters cannot wait for today's potty. You can catch it, The Game with Duff and Quarters and Skeet. Download it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for coming in, gentlemen. We'll talk to you next week.
Pleasure, mate.
Wild West.
Now, it has been an absolutely massive show, and there is no better way to end it than bringing in Perth Now editor Nat Richards. G'day, Nat.
Good morning. How are you?
I can see you looking through the window of the studio to watch the Olympics on the TV. What I can't see it from where I am.
I know Jack McLaughlin. He's in the 800 metres right now, and it doesn't look like he's in, from what I can see through this muddy window, it doesn't look like he's in a medal position right now. There's a fair way to go yet.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, that's right. So it's a fair way to go. So we've got some.
You such anxiety watching them, doesn't it? You end up swimming while you're watching telly.
And it changes.
Like doing the arms.
It changes so quick as well. We just had Ashley Mullaney over there in Tokyo, who was with Saya Sakakibara's grandma and her brother ahead of the BMX. Mm. The BMX has raced, and unfortunately, Saya finished sixth. She finished sixth, and so she's not going to make it through to the final.
That's such a
pretty
shame,
sad.
Isn't it?
Pretty sad. She was such a great story at this Olympics. Talking about great stories, there's a farmer wants a wife pregnancy bombshell.
Yes. I don't know how we're going to segue from Olympics into farmer wants a wife. So here we go. Yes. Hayley Love, who was matched with Matt this season, has announced that she is pregnant, except bombshell twist, it's not Matt's baby.
What?
It's Farmer Will's.
Oh my!
How is this? How is this even possible?
Hang on, wasn't she Matt's farm?
Yeah, so she was shacked up with Matt, right?
Yeah.
She got kicked out. He's like, nope, no thanks, love, don't want you. And next minute, she tells us that she's pregnant with one of the other farmer's babies. Now, this is how it happened. Apparently, they got messaging afterwards. They started catching up. They had a few rendezvous, shall we say, and now she's pregnant. And this gets even better. So now they've split. So when she was 6 weeks pregnant, she told him. She says, I was really scared to tell him. They've now ended their relationship. She's going through the pregnancy solo. But she says that they are remaining friends. He's coming to the ultrasounds with her. You know, that he's going to be very much involved. Sevens wished her all the best and said that they wish all their contestants the best and, you know, said wish her well with her pregnancy and whatnot. He's posted a meme up on social media, hasn't really said anything. He's sort of attacked the people, sort of making a bit of a slight, really, at those that have had a crack at him. Because you can imagine the fans have just laid into him. Like, how dare you chuck a pregnant woman?
Yeah.
It's outrageous.
Not a great look, let's be honest.
No, it's not. And it's wow, I didn't even know this was possible. I didn't even know it was possible.
What,
not,
pregnancy?
No, to be pregnant to another farmer when you eat one. Like, how she ended up with the other one?
The farms weren't next door to each other, were they?
These farms are miles away from each other. Well, it's not like Married at First Sight where they're all having dinner parties every two bloody minutes.
The only thing that I want to know, and you might not be able to answer this, the only thing that I want to know about this situation is who sent the first message. Did she message Farmer, what's his name?
Farmer Will.
Did she message Farmer Will? After she broke it off with Farmer Matt?
That's what we don't like to know.
Did Farmer Will go, oh, hang on, she's on the market?
Who started it?
I'm sure there's a whole bunch of farming-related jokes that we could bring in.
Who finished it is what we want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Who ended it?
Yeah, who broke it off? And this is the thing. Like, you know what?
Bombshell.
I don't buy the criticism that, you know, they should have stuck together. If it wasn't working, it wasn't working. You can't, you know, it's long past the days of you stick together for the kids. Like, that's, you know, from the 1950s, and it doesn't do anyone's mental health any good. So if they had to break up, they had to break up. Everybody should just live with that.
That's fair enough. But, yeah, absolute bombshell. I think nobody expected that one coming.
Whoa. That's more drama than on the actual TV show.
It's known as being the most wholesome of the reality TV shows. You know, it's farmers wanting a wife.
Do you know what we need? Farmer wants a wife after dark. Can we get that going?
I think you've just volunteered to host that one, Ben.
That would be a ratings bonanza.
It would, wouldn't it?
Exactly. I think this is kind of maybe quite useful because an Olympian over there in Tokyo has made use of a condom, which is maybe something that Farmer Will could have used.
Yes. So, Jess Fox, who, by the way, is absolute goals. I love her.
Yeah, she's a legend.
She, and apparently from what I hear from people who've met her, she's a lovely, down-to-earth, lovely, lovely girl as well and deserves every success. And I think we're all rooting for her today in the canoeing. Anyway, she's been out in the...
Is that what it is? Is it called canoeing?
It's canoeing today, isn't it? No, it's been kayaking. She does both. There's a difference, actually. One, the kayak's where you sit. And the canoe's where you kneel, or is it the other way around?
I think you sit in a kayak.
Yeah, they explained it on the telly yesterday, the Dummy's Guide to Canoeing and Kayaking. Canoeing's like a bathtub,
I just thought that was some sort of, like, you know, British nickname that you had for it. She's going canoeing.
She does a canoeing. That's what she's in today. She's in the final. Yeah. She's hoping for a gold. Hopefully she will get a gold, her first one at the Olympics. But she's, when she was out in the kayak, it gets smashed around a fair bit, right? So, I mean, it's pretty bad. It's your most important piece of equipment, that and your paddle.
The kayak,
that's all you got.
Yeah.
So, anyways, the kayak's got seriously damaged. Now, they have a team over there that, like, repairs these things.
Yeah.
So she showed us on her Instagram exactly how they fix them. And what they do is they squish this carbon fibre. They have this, like, putty that they mould over the damaged nose of the kayak and squish it all in. And then they seal it in place with a condom.
Really?
Yeah, that's how you fix a kayak.
Well, you know what? That is so lucky because there's so many of them left over there in the Olympic Village because the organisers said that they're not going to be distributing condoms because they don't want any bonking going on because of COVID.
Hey.
But they still
Olympic
have the condoms.
Babies.
But they still have the condoms there. So they have like tens of thousands of condoms that are just there doing nothing, apparently. I bet they're getting pretty well used.
This gets me like, the whole point of them is that you don't end up with unwanted pregnancies in this. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Exactly.
Somebody, oh, wow. This is a storyline waiting to happen, Ben. Yeah.
Well, do you know what we need to do? We need for the next season of Farmer Wants a Wife, we need Jess Fox to instruct the farmers on how to properly use a condom. You can use it, and it'd be handy. They'll love it on the farm.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
They could use it to fix their tractors. It'd be very useful.
Ben.
And not to mention for what they're actually intended for.
Hell.
But Nat Richards, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm glad I could give you a laugh. I hope you come in and see us tomorrow.
Thanks, Ben. I will.
Well, that's it from me. You can download the full show or individual interviews by searching for The West Live online. And of course, if you're loving the game, be sure to download Let's Go Tokyo with myself and Mark Reddings. We'll keep you across everything at the Olympics, and it's available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.